The Guardian.
Welcome to the Guardian World Cup Daily. The tournament begins with a Russian rout of Saudi Arabia, Robbie Williams giving the world the middle finger, and some nice photos of Vladimir Putin and Gianni Infantino. We'll check in with Sid Lowe, who's had a relaxing couple of days following Spain. Take your questions too, put it all together, and that's the Guardian World Cup Daily. In the studio, opposite me, Barry Glendening.
Hello.
Are you going to do the alcohol-free fitness World Cup with me like you promised?
I didn't promise to do an alcohol-free World Cup. I promised to do a fitness World Cup. And yeah, I've already only had two cigarettes today.
Very well done. John Bruin is here as well. How are you, John?
Very well, Max. Good to see you.
Do you want to take part?
In what, the booze-free one or the fitness one?
Well, both.
The latter seems preferable, if also quite unlikely.
Okay. The World Cup is here, gentlemen. Barry, how excited are you on a scale of Barry to 10?
I'm really looking forward to it. I enjoyed that opening game. It's kind of low on quality, some very good goals. And things can sort of only get better, I suppose.
How about you, John?
It's crept up on me, actually. But yeah, watching that first game, suddenly actually quite excited about the tournament.
At the game was Barney Ronne. Barney, how are you? Where do we find you?
Hello. You find me gazing down over the now empty Luzhniki Stadium, like Vladimir Putin staring down at his empire with no stadiums left to conquer. I really enjoyed it as well. It was fun, wasn't it? The goals were great. Saudi Arabia were terrible. And I can sort of get what this World Cup's going to feel like now. It's going to feel big and epic and quite fun.
How was the opening ceremony? How did it go down in the stadium?
It was good. I mean, I'd say it was definitely, the best Robbie Williams gig I've ever been to. he was great, wasn't he? He was good. He pranced around. I mean, it's slightly odd him being here. I don't really understand why he's opening the world's greatest spectacle. I mean, he was in Take That. That's a good thing. But he seemed to enjoy himself, and it was over quickly, importantly.
You sent quite a good tweet.
So that was good.
You sent a good tweet, Barney, saying that, Robbie singing one of his most popular songs in Russian, Let Me Illegally Detain You. Dave asked, how quickly did you come up with that pun, or did you have alternative Russia Robbie puns lined up just in case he'd started with Rock DJ or Millennium?
Well, you've got John's there. John will know I was under a bit of pressure after the previous World Cup opening ceremony, where I came up with what I'd like to think of as the tweet of my life. I've been stewing on it for a while. I dropped it during the opening ceremony, and it didn't go global and break me as a Twitter phenomenon, as I've been hoping. But people still talk about my shitball tweet during Pitbull's performance. I did feel pressured to come up with something. But I wasn't really happy with that one. I thought it was a little bit juvenile, really.
Oh, I got a retweet from me. You may not have seen that he swore down the lens, Barry, on the television, didn't he?
I missed that, I'm afraid.
He gave
everyone the finger.
Yeah, because he was saying he was doing it for free. There was a big thing about the fact that he... he was taking Putin's money, and he was saying, no, I'm doing it for free. Interestingly, from one of the Red Tops this morning, today's performance came after Robbie has spent the last 4 years raking in millions by performing at oligarchs' private parties and functions. He is known to have got in with the Chelsea boss Roman Abramovich over the past decade, and as recently as April last year reportedly pocketed £1.6 million for performing at the wedding of the daughter of one of the richest Russian oil magnates. So, he's doing this one for free, though, so that's okay. Tierney says, is Robbie Williams' middle finger more iconic than Diana Ross's missed penalty, John?
I don't think Miss Ross's penalty will ever be surpassed as an opening ceremony. I'm just intrigued by that idea of, what essentially is like karaoke from some bloke from Stoke that is the Russian, it's the must-have for any self-respecting oligarch.
Well, I was just wondering why these young daughters of oligarchs would be interested in in having Robbie Williams performed. I mean, I remember Take That, and I don't even want to watch him. It seems strange.
Onto the game. The two of the goals, Cheryshev's second goal especially, Barry, was a thing of total beauty, wasn't it?
Yeah, a wonderful sort of insouciant swish of his left foot outside of the boot and the ball curled into the top corner. I really enjoyed his first one as well, the two little touches after the two defenders had completely committed themselves. I mean, you know, there were some good goals in this game, but the Saudi defence was utterly appalling, like truly disastrous. And even for that free kick right at the end, you know, the goalkeeper took an age to get across.
It was so funny.
Which I think was a shame, because I think the ball would have gone in anyway, but his ineptitude makes it that wonderful free kick and look less good than it was. But, Russia were completely dominant throughout. Igor Akinfeev didn't have to make a single save, I don't think. And Saudi Arabia's total ineptitude, it doesn't bode well for a 48-team World Cup, does it?
Now, Matty says, Barney, how many will Suarez and Cavani stick past Saudi Arabia? And David said, had any of the Saudis played football before? When you're at the ground, you get a better sense of the shape of the game, I think, than watching it on TV. Could you come up with a defence for Saudi Arabia?
No, I mean, my defence of Saudi Arabia would be similar to Saudi Arabia's defence of Saudi Arabia. they just look really weak. They look really small. And they're terrible, really. Somebody asked, one of my colleagues on the press box was suggesting Stuart James would have got into that team, the Saudi team. But Stuart, who's a very good footballer in his day, and I think they're probably right. He probably would have been captain, and they probably would have only lost 3-0. No, I mean, they were terrible. It's really quite bizarre that this has happened, that they're the World Cup allowed to be that terrible, but there we go.
But Barney, if Stuart James had been in that Saudi team, would Salman Al-Farage have been able to file 800 words of pristine prose right on the final whistle?
He would have been really good in the mix zone with himself after the game. I can guarantee that.
Alexander Golovin is getting a lot of praise, John. Did he stand out for you?
Yeah. One of the build-up to that Russian team was how it was a team with essentially no stars, but I think that game proved that there is some skill within that team. Golovin was very good. The guy that went off, Jagoyev, was excellent until he went off, and then Cheryshev came on for him. So
you got to feel really sorry for Jagoyev as well, because he missed Confederations Cup, he missed Euro 2016 yes. through injury. I think he was injured during the last World Cup and was limited to a few substitute appearances. But he looks like his tournament is over already now.
And he was in tears, wasn't he, when he left the field? Clearly a talented player, but Russia have some element of talent there. The problem is that we don't know about the opposition is going to be quite as bad as that. I don't watch much Saudi League football, but I wasn't aware that passing the ball square across defence was still a practice in the professional game, but they seem to like doing that quite a lot.
Barney, there's been a photo of Vladimir Putin shaking the hand of Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman of Saudi Arabia across the lap of Gianni Infantino. I mean, I don't know how close you got to any of those guys, if you managed to get a selfie with them or have a little chat.
Well, it was an interesting image, wasn't it? You do look at Infantino and you know that he himself is thinking, what on earth am I doing here? I mean, he looks like he's there to refill the bowl of peanuts. Say what you like about Sepp Blatter, but he did the whole kind of football messiah thing quite well, and you felt he was mad, power-crazed, and capable of anything. But Infantino is simply unconvincing. He's the office clerk who kind of rose to sit there with two of the most powerful men in the world. Bizarre.
I did notice after Putin's hugely inspiring speech, made more inspiring by the translator over here, Gianni gave it a bit of the banter that he used to do when he used to do like Europa League draw and stuff. You know, he's still trying to turn it on a bit, but
there is an awkward thing though. I mean, Sepp Blatter is in Russia, and he's a good friend with with Putin, but he doesn't like Infantino. They're definitely not good friends. So there's going to be an awkwardness. I was worried Blatter would show up in the box, and it would be what's he doing here? You didn't tell me he was coming. But the daggers across the box. It could be socially awkward.
Blatter is currently banned from all soccer-related activities. You would have to say the World Cup is slightly soccer-related. Yeah, I know there's a lot of stuff going on around it, a lot of politics, but you know, there is just a smidgen, a soupçon of football going on.
Yeah, but obviously, you know, he'll just have a ticket and go up to a turnstile, and the turnstile person won't have that photo of Sepp Blatter, and will just let him straight through. Barney, what's next for you?
Well, I'm staying in Moscow, and I'm going to Argentina, Iceland, which will be brilliant, and Mexico, Germany, which could also be very good. There's a lot of people in sombreros here. Lots of Mexicans, billions of Peruvians somehow.
That's very strange. And is the atmosphere wonderful, or do you feel like you're, you know, sort of creeping around a despotic regime, or both?
It's one thing you realise when you get here is that I know absolutely nothing about Russia, and no one really does. It's much more complex than all the Newsweek magazine articles I'd read had led me to believe. Russians are just these guys. I mean, it's a normal country. It's just a little bigger and a little greyer. I think the World Cup's going to be fun, and I think everyone will take to it.
Great start. Well, thanks for coming on, Barney, and we'll no doubt ring you up again.
Okay, cheers.
Cheers, Barney Ronay there. Just your thoughts on ITV's start. To me, Ian Wright and Slaven Bilic are the stars there, even though they've brought in Gary Neville. Gary Neville's used to just being the only person talking.
I don't think the ITV format suits Gary Neville. He's used to being the star man and to having, you know, able to do deep dives into things, whereas ITV have ad breaks to cut to, so he doesn't get to speak for more than, you know, maybe 20 seconds at a time. It probably doesn't suit him, but that was his first time. I didn't really get much of a chance to focus on their coverage because I was doing the minute-by-minute report, but I did notice they were getting quite a lot of criticism on Twitter. I don't know if it was justified or not, but I saw Paddy Barclay in particular was hypercritical.
He was very critical because at halftime they did a lot on a potential VAR incident, yes, which wasn't really a VAR incident. And I think you can forgive them for that, given that VAR is a big deal and not much else happened in that first half.
Well, I don't think they'd be the first broadcaster to go over penalties that never were. One in particular in his country, BT, seems to do that every week. But I thought Gary Neville looked a little bit lost there, especially with Slaven Bilic sat next to him. And Bilic, I mean, those of us that have attended his press conferences over the years will know that Slaven starts at one point, meanders round a fair bit, meanders round, comes back round, thinks about it a bit more, and then comes up with his points. And again, that he's good on TV, I think, but I'm not sure he's suited to the format either. But him and Ian Wright do seem to have hit on a relationship. Gary Neville didn't seem to understand what Slaven Bilic was talking about when he was talking about the why Russian football is not great because of the foreigner rule making it too easy for Russian players to get paid well, at which point Gary Neville said that he thinks there should be a foreigner rule in this country as well, which suggested he didn't really listen to what Slaven had said or understand it.
Clive Tilsley came up with the line of the day, commenting that Stalin had a great moustache.
Yes.
Which is undeniable, potentially strange to bring up.
He did have an absolute zinger, Clive. Towards the end, Saudi Arabia brought on Mohamed Asiri, and Tilsley, sharp as a tack, said, "Asiri, how do you come from 3-0 down with 5 minutes to go in the opening match of the World Cup?" Which I thought, hats off, that is a funny line.
Well, he just hoped that he'd come on as a sub, I think.
Probably.
Yes. Never,
you know.
Well, still, no, well, credit due to Clive.
Do we know if Siri is the same as Alexa? I mean, we found out on our radio show that if you say, "Alexa, put on Mike and the Mechanics," basically people listening to this pod now are now listening to Mike and the Mechanics and not us. I wonder if Siri is the same, or are they different? They're different things.
They're similar things, aren't they?
I don't know.
I've never ever enabled it on my phone, so.
Fine. It's not why people listen to the pod to find out these things. You can watch the Gadget Show if you want that. That'll do then for part one.
Well, our audience are now listening to the living years. so we could just go home.
Every generation.
Back in a minute where we'll chat to Sid Lowe. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football World Cup Daily. Let's talk to Sid Lowe. Sid, how are you?
I'm all right, thank you. Yeah, just about.
Relaxing couple of days for you?
Yeah. It's been nice and easy here on the coast of the Black Sea, the Russian Riviera, I think they call it, or my hotel room, as it's also known, or the media centre at the stadium. It's been kind of busy.
So we had this press conference with Fernando Hierro and Sergio Ramos this afternoon. How did that go?
Well, I think one of the things to point out, and far be it from me to query the nature of your question, is that we had that press conference, and then about half an hour afterwards, we then had the press conference of Julian Lopetegui being announced and presented as manager of Real Madrid. In other words, this whole sitcom, this whole kind of drama continues to roll on. Spain players were preparing on the pitch here in Sochi at the same time as Lopetegui, their manager until 3 days ago, was being presented as Real Madrid manager at the Bernabeu. Another person invited to give their version of the story, another contradiction to some of the story out there, another chance for recriminations, and it just kind of doesn't end. In terms of the Spain press conference, Ramos's line was left to the very, very end, the one that kind of summed it all up, and I think was quite nice. He said, look, this place looks like a tanatorio, which is where the bodies lie in rest before a funeral. In other words, like a funeral parlour. So this place looks like a funeral parlour. The World Cup starts tomorrow. And there was a kind of, I think, a really kind of lovely sort of optimism about that. Tomorrow we play football, we can forget all this shit. Now, obviously, you can't entirely forget it because it completely conditions everything, because the whole reason why this is big is the fact that there's a World Cup tomorrow. This all happened on the eve of the tournament, that it felt like all of this mattered more than the fact that Spain were playing in a World Cup. But Ramos's kind of message today was, right, it's all forgotten, it's all gone, it's all done. Tomorrow we play.
Are you surprised Lopetegui was fired?
You know what? I don't know. I've gone backwards and forwards. I mean, I was surprised he was fired, but I suppose once the initial news had broken, once we'd seen the hurt that it had caused Rubiales, his anger, his sense of kind of damaged pride, I think it wasn't that surprising. I think when you think carefully about everything that happened, when you think about all the ramifications of everything, I'm still not sure if it was the right decision, but I can certainly see some of the logic in it. There's also bits of it I can see that I think are illogical as well. But I guess in a way it was certainly a plausible decision to take, put it that way.
Sid, what was he thinking? I mean, why didn't he either keep Rubiales in the loop or just let his agent look after negotiations and not agree to do anything until after the World Cup?
Well, I think this is it, and I think it's extraordinary, really, because I mean, and that, you know, being here in Sochi, I was able to follow bits of Lopetegui's press conference immediately after Spain had spoken, but not all of it. But it was an extraordinary event that felt slightly staged. There was applause at key moments. There were key points he made. He broke down and cried at one point. He said, you know, apart from the death of my mother, yesterday was the worst day of my life, but today is the best. And I think this is one of the things that, I mean, I was saying this yesterday, people weren't really talking about it, saying, but the damage this does to Lopetegui, the impact this has on him. I mean, we're talking about someone who obviously fundamentally said yes to Real Madrid, and yes to Real Madrid right now, because of that belief, to use the Spanish cliche, that this train won't come past again. You know, this is a one-off opportunity. You've got to take it. And you won't get another opportunity like this. But, of course, the consequence of that is that he doesn't get the opportunity, which definitely will never, ever come back. And, frankly, to be honest, the Madrid job might have come round again in 6 months' time. You know, he's given up the opportunity to go to the World Cup with a team that could genuinely win it. Now, of course, he didn't anticipate that being a problem. Of course, at some point, he was naive enough to think, oh, well, it's OK. But I'm with you. I find it baffling that there wasn't a point at which he said, look, there's two or three things that you can do. At the very, very start, when they first come to you, and obviously you know that they've come to you because other people have said no, you know that up to a point they are running out of options. Now, that's not necessarily to say they'll definitely wait for you, because, of course, they might not, and you know that they might go on to someone else just as they came on to you. But at that point, it seems to me there's a response at the very start which can be, look, I have a buyout clause of €2 million, which obviously they knew because that's the reason why this whole thing can happen. In other words, there doesn't need to be any negotiations. In other words, you know you are going to get me. You know that the Federation isn't going to stop it. And I give you my word that I will not turn this down. But now, please, don't contact me again until after the World Cup, and then I'll do it. Now, obviously, Real Madrid at some point have decided that this needs to be done sooner. They've decided that they're under pressure as well. So at that point, Lopetegui has to say, OK, but let's please talk to the Federation. Let's at least go through the charade, the process of saying we're consulting you and we want to do this the right way and we want to do it with kind of decency and so on. Now, obviously, as I say, Lopetegui tonight has suggested that he knows what loyalty is and that the response from the Federation was over the top and was mistaken. But at that point, you can say that. The other thing you can say, even if they say, no, we don't want to do that, we just want to nail this now and it's done, you can at least say, OK, but before you announce it, let me tell Rubiales, let me tell the players, let me come up with a strategy for this not to be damaging. Because the bottom line in all this is, Julian Lopetegui is the manager of the Spain team at the World Cup. He surely must have known that this could do some damage. He surely knows. And lots of people have said, oh, it doesn't matter, they're all professional, they all still want to win the World Cup. He still wants to win the World Cup. No one's going to down tools because of this happening. No, of course they're not going to down tools, but by definition, your relationship with the players, your relationship with everything that kind of surrounds the national team is conditioned by this. And so I'm like you, I find it baffling that at no point did he say to Real Madrid, look, we cannot do it like this. We cannot just put this out immediately because of the damage. Forget the damage it does to Spain. Forget the damage it does to Real Madrid or the potential damage it does to Real Madrid. Even from a purely selfish point of view, he should have thought about the damage it might do for him. And I must admit, I feel kind of sorry for him. I know him reasonably well, and he's, I've always quite liked him. And I'm afraid to say he's got this horribly wrong.
Will this change anything that Spain do before the game tomorrow or their team selection? Presumably, I mean, he might have said to Hierro, this is what I do, by the way, or Hierro would know anyway.
Well, what Hierro has said today, and actually he said it broadly yesterday as well, it was curious, by the way, the press conference between Hierro and Ramos, the immense majority of the questions for Ramos, there weren't many questions of Hierro, who's the incoming manager. Now, obviously, there's a couple of reasons for that. One is that Hierro had spoken yesterday, and the other, of course, is that Ramos hadn't yet spoken as the captain and seemingly a key player in these negotiations, someone who really plays a captain's role, really imposes. I guess people wanted his opinion, but it was still interesting to hear so little from Hierro today. What Little did say was, as he said in part yesterday, the idea is to change as little as possible. We haven't had time to make changes. We're not going to do that. We're going to respect the work that's been done in the last 2 weeks and indeed going back the last 2 years. That work's really good. We trust in it. We trust in the players. And we're just going to kind of carry on. So he's almost there as a caretaker, at least in the short term. I don't think we anticipate any significant change. Now, obviously, some of the nuance might be different. Some of the tactical variation, which Lopetegui had worked really, really hard on, you know, shifting to a three-man defence, moments in games in which you open the pitch out, moments in games in which you play inside much more than outside. One or two little kind of tactical little tweaks, which I think were, while relatively minor, were quite interesting. Those have been lost, or I suppose have been lost. I mean, I think it's going to be very difficult intuitively for Hierro to follow that kind of plan. But the bottom line is, for example, you asked me, what's tomorrow's starting 11? It's exactly the same as I would have said to you 5 days ago.
So there's rumours going around that Sergio Ramos went for Rubiales in a, you know, aggressive fashion during what you call the negotiations. Any truth to it that you're aware of?
Right. Well, I'll give you a couple of responses to that without being able to say definitively that I can stand it out one way or the other. The first one is that this was a story put out by a TV channel that is extremely close to the president of Real Madrid. And by extremely close, I don't just mean in terms of the relationship is good and therefore the source is good. I mean more to the point, the relationship is almost propagandistic. So there's possibly a reason for this story coming out. The second one is that I'm aware of two Spain players who were told about this story. This has just been put out on this TV channel at lunchtime today, and a response from both was to laugh at it. Now, obviously, that's two players who maybe haven't seen it, two players who maybe don't know, and two players who maybe aren't telling the truth. But that would suggest, certainly from my point of view, that this is something to be treated with a lot of caution.
And Ramos isn't that kind of player, is he?
It's also true for what it's worth, by the way, that Ramos in the press conference today was asked repeatedly about what he'd said, and he effectively said yes, that he had tried to back Lopetegui in terms of keeping him, and he still said, but now's not the time to talk about that. You know, we've all got different opinions. There is no split in the squad. But you know, let's just turn a page, basically.
Is there anything in the conspiracy that George Mendes, Lopetegui's agent, is unsettling the Spanish side ahead of their meeting with his home country? Oh, this is ridiculous.
No, I mean, there's another version of the conspiracy theory, which is that Real Madrid are trying to unsettle the Spain team. I don't think either of those two particularly stand up. It is certainly true that the kind of the sense of what matters and how significant Spain is, of course, is relevant in this. You know, how much does it really matter? And it's interesting watching the way that people's positions have shifted on this, you know, in terms of who it is that were the Patriots and who it is that have become the Patriots in terms of defending the Spanish national team or not, in terms of embracing it or not. And as usual, unfortunately, it comes down to kind of trenches drawn along club lines much more than along country ones.
Sid, I hope you have a more relaxing rest of tournament.
Not much chance without the question mark now, I suppose, is how long this tournament lasts for me. Because, I mean, there is that question, isn't it? Does this make a difference for Spain? Could it actually be good for them?
You sort of think they, you know, now it's a real sort of get together and up yours to the rest of you. You know, we can do this.
I don't think it's going to make much difference.
I think there's something in that, and I think emotionally and in terms of the unity, I think there is something in that, as you say, I kind of get together and say, right, sob the rest of you, we're going to do this, we can do this. And did you see the example that Piquet picked up on? Piquet picked up on Michigan 1989. Did you see this?
No.
So Michigan in 1989, they sacked their coach. This is about the basketball team. A guy called Bill Frieder, I don't actually know how you say it. They sacked him because he announced that he was going to Arizona State at the end of the playoffs. Right, so they sacked him immediately. Said, "I'm not having a coach of Arizona State coaching us." Put his assistant in, a guy called Steve Fisher, and they went and won the NCAA championships. PK put that example up on Twitter and said, "So it wouldn't be the first time."
Sid, did PK or Sergio Ramos happen to mention the Offaly hurling team of 1994, who won the All Ireland hurling final after their manager quit in a fit of pique early in the championship? It can be done.
Unfortunately, they didn't. I'm sure had they known about that, I'm sure they would have said so.
Thanks for your time, Sid.
Pleasure. Cheerio.
Speak to you through the World Cup. Sid Lowe there, following Spain. I was just a bit sad that Hierro hasn't brought in some of the Bolton players from 2004-05 to his coaching staff.
Kevin Nolan.
Davis.
Is even Campo's mane still resplendent?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Yes.
It might be a little greyer, but let's hope on the touchline we see Nolan, Hunt and Ricardo Vazte pulling the strings for a Spanish World Cup win.
The thing is, actually, could Portugal have a little mini crisis of their own, aren't they? Because four of their likely starters have joined the stampede for the sporting exodus, or have joined the stampede for the sporting exit door, and that club seems to be in complete meltdown with their megalomaniac chairman, who seems like a complete basket case altogether. So they're sort of going to be stressing out about the possibility of a big legal battle to get out of their contracts. And they seem to have just cause on the grounds that they were attacked by 50 supporters at the training ground after they failed to qualify for the Champions League. But it's Portugal. It's not all plain sailing in that camp either.
All right. Well, look, that'll do for part two. In part three, we'll preview the other games. Welcome to part three. The first kickoff of the day tomorrow, Group A's other two teams, Egypt versus Uruguay. And Mo Salah is fit, Barry.
He is fit. He's poor old Mo's having a tough time of it at the moment, so I'm glad he's fit. Because, immediately after he knacked his shoulder in the Champions League final, there was that selfie of him looking very morose beside some idiot celebrity chef I'd never heard of before. And then earlier this week, he seems to have spent all his time in the company of Ramzan Kadyrov, who has quite a murky CV, to say the least. But he seems to have hijacked Salah for no end of photo ops. I'm going to speculate that Mohamed Salah has no idea who this weird bearded dwarf guy is. So it'll be nice for him to finally be able to focus on football. He'll have seen that game today between Russia and Saudi Arabia. He'll fancy his chances of filling his boots against that. Both defences, I'd imagine. And I think Egypt have every chance of qualifying from that group. And it will be interesting to see how they get on.
I am still concerned about that injury, though.
Unless you're Mel Gibson in Lethal Weapon, you don't just carry on, do you? You don't stick it back in and carry on.
No, or in some sort of Escapes of Victory or one of these type of fantasy films. I mean, one of the things that Sergio Ramos, who essentially is, you know, the Dark Lord of football these days, he did say that one of the reasons why he wasn't so sorry about the Salah injury was because Salah could have played on if he'd had an injection. So which suggests that it wasn't that bad and that they discussed it. But I'm thinking of famous people going in with a dislocated shoulder, and I can only come back to one thing, and you're of a similar vintage to me, Max, a bit younger.
Oh, I know who this is.
Brian Robson.
Yeah. Brian Robson.
Now, in the 85-86 season, Robbo put his shoulder out about three or four times, actually had done it the previous season, and I think went into the World Cup wearing an Australian harness from that they used to wear in Aussie Rules football, because it happens quite a lot in Aussie Rules football. Needless to say, game two against Morocco, it pinged out. And that's what I fear for Salah. Maybe medical science has moved on since those rather more primitive days, but that is my big fear, because without him, if you look at that team and you look at the way that he inspired them to qualify for the World Cup in the first place, it's a real worry for Egypt, because I agree with Barry, if he's fit and firing, they can actually go through in this group.
It's an iconic photo, that, isn't it, actually, of Brian Robson being carried off drenched in sweat.
Is it Fred Street would be the doctor? I think that was his name.
You have better knowledge than I do on that. Uruguay, you know, they have some... Well, they have Suarez and Cavani, I mean, as well as other players, but that's the key for them, isn't it?
Well, that, obviously, and they've Godin and Jimenez in central defence, who played with each other week in, week out for Atletico Madrid. So that's obviously going to be helpful for them. I fancy Uruguay to go a long way in this competition. Potential winners, but they'd certainly be, you know, among the top of my teams that aren't among the favourites to win it. I think I quite fancy them. And they used to play very defensively. I don't think they do anymore. And, you know, they qualified above Argentina in South American qualifying. And again, Suarez and Cavani will be licking their lips looking at that opening game today. They will just think, well, we can absolutely make hay against both these defences.
And in the Guardian World Cup guide to Uruguay, they had a nice note, which was there are five countries in the world that have more cows than humans, and Uruguay, I believe, after New Zealand, has the most. Four of the five have qualified for the World Cup. So that's an interesting stat, isn't it? The other game is tomorrow is Spain and Portugal's group, Morocco versus Iran. You've got notes, Barry.
Well, I think you're the man to talk to about Morocco, because their manager cut his teeth at Cambridge United.
He did. I've mentioned
Irv Reynard.
I've mentioned it before on the pod. Michael Butler's just done a brilliant piece, actually, which I recommend you go and read, where he's talked to some Cambridge legends, Andy Duncan and Shane Tudor and John Ruddy, who started his career there. And Irv Reynard gave John Ruddy his debut, actually. I would say that trying to save a team in League Two is a different skill to taking an African nation to the World Cup or to the African Cup of Nations. And Irv Reynard has proved very good at one of those things and not so good at the other.
He's won the African Cup of Nations with two different teams. This is his first World Cup. He's obviously famous for his sartorial elegance on the sideline, always wears a crisp white shirt. Did he wear the one on the sideline and during his Cambridge days and at like freezing February afternoon at the Abbey Stadium?
I can't remember, actually, because he came with Claude Lelouch, and obviously we were so excited that we'd brought in these two, it's frankly totally ludicrous appointments, but we're very excited. I've seen some, can picture Lelouch in a sort of scarf and a sort of sort of quite a nice overcoat.
Linen shirt or something.
Yeah,
like
I think, yeah. So, but I think he had an anorak in my mind, anyway.
But probably very expensive anorak.
Yeah. Well, he might not have had the money he has now.
Yeah. But one of the things in Michael's article, which I agree with, very good, where he talked about the fitness work that he put in and how he was fitter than all the players at Cambridge, which may not surprise you, Max, but I wonder if that's still the case now.
What about Iran?
Well, Carlos Queiroz is their manager. We all know who he is. Former Real Madrid, Portugal manager, spent time at Manchester United as Sir Alex Ferguson's number two. And he's in a row with Nike because they refused to supply Iran's players with boots for the World Cup because it would be in breach of sanctions, trade sanctions. And Carlos Queiroz got very upset about this, even though it would mean Nike breaking the law. And Nike are, you know, very ethically sound company. They would never do anything dubious. But they draw the line at supplying Iran's players with boots. And he accused them of sort of putting boots on themselves and stamping all over these young players' dreams. But I hope they don't run out barefoot. Well, actually, it would be quite funny if they did. I would imagine they'll be able to scare up a few pairs of boots between them.
So it's not like Pony or something, you know.
And Queiroz, he has a very fractious relationship with the Iranian FAA and has threatened to quit on numerous occasions, but because they won't accede to his demands. But they eventually do, and he generally tends to be right. I don't know. I can't see them getting out of this group, but who knows?
A Morocco considerably better than Iran?
This game,
yes.
A draw is no good to either of these teams tomorrow. They, you know, one of them will win and be in with a chance, a slim chance of getting out of the group. Whoever loses will be out. If they draw, it's no good to anyone.
I think the idea is that Morocco are possibly Africa's best team, but they've actually got the worst draw out of any African team. This game, I mean, the two coaches who build a game around defence, so it's going to be cagey in that way that so many of these early matches are, where, you know, just they're actually feeling out the conditions, because it's been played in St. Petersburg, where you'd expect the conditions to be widely similar to Moscow. But we're in that point where we don't quite know how the pitches are playing. One thing I would mention, actually, just over the game that we've seen, the refereeing seems to be relatively lax, which is something I recall from the 2014 World Cup, where it was said in an attempt to bring in the American market, who don't like the sight of people falling over under a challenge.
And they don't like stop-start sports do they?
Yeah, yeah. And
apart from all their sports.
And they call it flopping, don't they? Right. And also the offside. A couple of instances during that game where what I would have thought were offside were not given. And I know that Pierluigi Collina spoke at that ahead of the tournament. But I'm not sure, will there be many offsides in this game? Because I think we're in for two teams that are going to play defensive.
All right. And that'll do for today's, the inaugural 2018 Russia World Cup Guardian World Cup Football Daily. One question from SHL, Barry. Are you doing a Love Island review?
I haven't seen Love Island in recent days. I've kind of given up on it because I'm going to be here most nights when it's on, and I don't want to be sad enough to Sky Plus it and then watch it first thing in the morning. I understand someone left in mysterious circumstances.
Niall.
Do we know why?
The Brummy guy.
Don't know why.
I saw that he'd left. I don't know enough about it. But
right.
No. Well, Alex, I believe, is still having a tough time. The doctor. Who looks completely lost. I think he applied for a totally different TV show. But don't worry, we'll be more informed on Love Island.
Is he coupled up, Dr. Alex?
I think they're all coupled up. That's how it works. You're always consistently in a couple, whether you...
I'm not.
Is Paul Dunan still in it?
I don't think he's ever been in it. By the end of the World Cup, Barry, we'll get you in that villa. tomorrow, Argentinian expert Marcelo Mora y Araujo joins us. Until then, have a wonderful day.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.